What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Hey, I just wanted to include a brief heads up for our listeners on this one. There is a little bit of talk of animal cruelty. We're not going to go into details, but if that's something you're sensitive to, you may want to check out on this one. Also, as you may have guessed from the title, sometimes this episode is gross.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
So Tracy, pollution is probably something you think of as a post-industrial age problem for humanity.
I think a lot of folks do.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty common belief, but in truth, we've kind of been finding ways to trash the planet for thousands of years. perhaps not with the great efficiency we currently possess, but there was a really interesting study of Greenland's ice cores in late 2012 and early 2013 that led to this revelation that greenhouse gases were actually a problem as far back as 2,000 years ago, and that was thanks to metallurgy and large-scale agriculture. So even as far back as the year 100 BCE, ancient Romans and their livestock were producing methane emissions. So were rice fields of China at the time, because of a bacteria that's associated with the rice crop that are methane producers. So as ancient Rome and the Han Dynasty of China declined, so did evidence of these emissions, according to this Greenland study, which was interesting. But of course, it's not like human civilization declined. It continued to develop. And as agriculture and technology in its various stages also developed, the emissions of human culture did too. And between the time of those ancient Roman livestock herds and Chinese rice fields that we just started talking about a moment ago, in the year 1600, emissions rose by almost 31 million tons per year. But today, we are going to talk about sort of a different type of pollution related to methane. Methane is a factor. And we're stepping forward a couple hundred years from 1600 to first the precursor and then what's called the Great Manure Crisis. And sometimes you'll see it listed as the Great Manure Crisis of 1894, although I did not want to give it one particular year because it's not like it was only a problem that year.
It's an ongoing issue of poop.
Yes, it's a time when methane was making things smell horrible and was a problem, but really the manure produced by one of the most vital animals for human survival at the time and human way of life led to serious issues in urban development. And before we jump in, I want to mention that primarily we're talking about New York and London in this episode, although this was a problem for pretty much any developing city at this time. But those are the places where they seem to have the most documentation of this problem.
Manure had become a problem in urban areas by the 1810s. The New York City Council passed a law in 1818 to license dirt carts, which were manure collectors, as part of a management effort. But as the city grew, so did the colossal amount of manure there.
It's going to get so colossal, I feel like I should tell everyone to just brace.
Yeah.
In November of 1880, there was a New York Times report on the workings of the city sanitation's department. And one of the ongoing nuisances that's described in great detail is a manure dump at the foot of East 92nd Street. And that article says, quote, "During the cold weather, while the river is filled with ice, stable refuse collects at this point. The Board of Health has permitted this accumulation under the stipulation that the offensive material shall be removed on or before May 1st of each year. This the owners have generally failed to do, and the board will probably refuse to permit the usual accumulation this winter."
This is like an even more disgusting version of Boston's snow farms when there's a really snowy winter and we just put all the snow somewhere, just go put it there, a big pile of it. It's going to be grosser as the year goes on.
Very similar, except this is way grosser.
Except even, yeah. I don't know. When you see pictures of the melting snow farm and you see the, like, all the filth that was plowed off the roads, that's where it gets really gross. But not this gross. So by the 1890s, cities had all kinds of transportation needs. You had goods and materials that needed to be carried from place to place. And then people needed to get around faster than they could walk. To meet these transportation needs, horses were increasingly what people turned to.
By 1900, in London, there were more than 50,000 working horses powering 11,000 cabs, several thousand buses, and various carts and delivery vehicles. But London wasn't unique in this. Most large cities had similar populations of working horses.
I'm just going to take a moment to say, when you and I were in New York doing our live show last year, we came around a corner and I was like, I smell horse. And it was because, you know, there are those horse-drawn carriage places and like also some mounted police. But this was a stable for the horse-drawn carriage people. There were maybe four or five horses, right? When we came around the corner and I was like, I smell horse. I cannot imagine the smell of horse
everywhere
in a place with thousands of horses. Like I don't know how that would have. Olfactory fatigue, I think, that's why we developed the ability to stop smelling things over time.
Right, when people speak about various different bathing standards of various cultures at different points in time, I think sometimes they're neglecting to factor in the fact that there are things like horse smell everywhere in the air.
Right. So once horses became the public transportation option, that segment of the working equine population grew really quickly. In the 18th century colonies, the use of horses for personal transport versus pulling cargo was a luxury only for well-off people. But by the late 19th century, 120,000 passengers were taking horse-pulled transportation in New York on an average day. Eventually, tracks were laid in New York, which made omnibuses even faster, more frequent, and more affordable, which meant demand for horse-drawn conveyance surged.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it was a time of great growth. We're in the Industrial Revolution time, so everything was happening very quickly. And if you've ever spent time with horses, like Tracy just mentioned being in New York, or any large animal for that matter, you know that they produce waste. And if you're talking about an animal the size of a horse, which is a large animal, they produce waste in significant amounts. So the average horse being fed regular meals produces 15 to 35 pounds, that's 6.8 to 15.8 kilograms of manure each day, as well as about a quart of urine.
That is a small child worth of waste.
Yes.
Try to imagine 50,000 horses, each producing their average output of feces in the streets of your nearest city. That is between 750,000 and 1.8 million pounds. Or, for the metrically inclined, 340,000 to 816,000 kilograms of horse manure piling up every day. In a city as large as New York in 1900, which had a larger horse population than London, reaching up to 200,000 horses at its apex. That amount could easily reach between 2.5 and 4 million pounds. It's 1.1 to 1.8 million kilograms. Every day. Literally every day. And all of that urine in the combined area of New York and Brooklyn toward the end of the 19th century, this added up to as much as 40,000 gallons or 151,000 cubic liters per day. So much poop and pee. So much. Giant amounts.
Well, and my thing is, like, you kind of have that moment where you read the statistic and you go, wow, that's a lot. And then you go, every day there's that amount over and over and over. Like, there's no end. It's not like you go, okay, we got 2.5 million pounds of manure that we got to deal with. It's like, tomorrow this will be 5 million if we don't cope with this today. And 7.5 million the day after that. Like, I really cannot stress how severe this problem was. And in addition to the horses, there were other animals on streets at this time, including pigs, cattle, sometimes sheep were not entirely out of the ordinary. And those animals were also contributing to the manure problem. And in addition to all of that manure and urine, horses would sometimes die in the course of their work. Some would fall in the busy streets, and if they were badly injured, they would be shot on the spot or sometimes simply left to die.
Heads up for sensitive listeners. Animal cruelty was also a very common reality for many of these animals. They were worked literally to death, which people who've read Black Beauty know. It was cheaper to treat a lot of horses very poorly and replace them than it was to treat them well and extend their working lives. And they were often stabled in very crowded conditions, which made them susceptible to disease.
While efforts were made to clean up the carcasses of these horses that were unfortunately dying in the street, for a number, there were as many as 15,000 deceased horses cleared from New York streets in the year 1880. That wasn't always possible, though, due to the large size of these animals. So sometimes they were left to decay in the thoroughfare so that they could eventually be reduced to a point where they could be disposed of more easily. So imagine the stench in addition to this, you know, multi-million pounds of manure, the thousands of gallons of urine, as well as decomposing bodies in the streets.
I just want to take another moment. I know I'm interjecting a lot in this episode. I had a class in college that was about Southern literature. There was this whole conversation about this hallmark of Southern literature was there being a dead mule that somebody had to figure out how to deal with. And got into this whole thing about, like, perceptions of life in the South and life in an agricultural area. And I'm like, well, we were not on purpose leaving the dead mule in the middle of a busy street.
Yeah, that was it was a very real problem. Now I'm thinking of both Flannery O'Connor and Faulkner. Now that you mentioned that, though.
Yep. So, before we talk about how some of this problem was dealt with, as well as some of the issues that were facing cities in addition to the manure and the dead animals, we are going to have a word from one of our sponsors.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about Comfort Hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Say goodbye to complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping, and say hello to an advantage with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Every business faces challenges, but shipping shouldn't be one of them. So keep things simple with clear, upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges for Saturday deliveries, residential deliveries, or fuel. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there, helping you counter the rising costs of doing business with a budget-friendly alternative. And keep things reliable with on-time ground shipping, ensuring your shipments get to where they need to go while maintaining your hard-earned reputation. USPS Ground Advantage is your ticket to easy, cost-effective, and dependable shipping. It's the complete delivery service your business needs to rise above the competition. There's never been a better time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So to return to our story, you may be wondering, what happened to all of this animal waste? Ideally, people cleaned it up. In reality, that's really difficult given the amount of manure there was to keep up with. Some of it could be used in the fertilizer trade, but the output of all of the manure from the animals quickly exceeded the demand for fertilizer. Eventually, the trade turned, and instead of farmers having to pay to have the fertilizer brought to them, city stables had to pay to have the manure taken out of the city.
And of course, not everyone paid for the services offered to take the manure away. So many opted instead to go the cheap route and dump their manure in vacant lots. Some lots grew so popular for this practice that the piles of waste were said to have risen as high as 40 to 60 feet. So that's 12 to 18 meters high. And that was in New York City.
So that's the manure from the stables. Manure that was not in the stables, but from the horses relieving themselves while out on their routes, which if you have ever ridden a horse, you know, just happens wherever. It would just sit untended in the streets, attracting flies and slowly drying out. And eventually that dry manure would turn into dust to be carried around the city on the wind if the weather was dry. In rainy conditions, a muddy mire of this manure developed, making traveling the city streets extremely difficult at best and miserable at worst and gross and unhygienic.
Yeah, just the ickiest.
I think about all of the various fictional films and whatnot that I have watched about London or New York during this time, and I'm like, some of them have the dirt. None of them show piles of manure 40 feet high.
No. Yeah, I'm thinking about some historical dramas that have, you know, ladies' dresses obviously filthy at the hems. But I don't
think... We think mud.
We don't think slurry of horse feces.
Yeah, it's very, very gross. And of course, a cottage industry of crossing sweepers grew out of this problem as well. So there were men that would stand on street corners waiting for pedestrians that wanted to cross, and they would charge a fee to clear the path of the people on foot so that the manure would not be in their way and they would not have to drag their clothes through it.
I'm just baffled by this whole thing.
It's very strange to think about.
This whole horse situation also caused lots of other problems in addition to the manure crisis. While additional animals to keep up with cities continuing to expand meant that there was more manure, the animals also needed additional resources. You needed land for stables and land for growing the hay that they needed to eat, and then land that people couldn't use because of the support crops that were going to feed the animals.
Yeah, an urban working horse regularly could consume, according to estimates, anywhere between 1.4 and 2.4 tons of hay in a given year. And that translates to roughly 5 acres of land, and that's to feed one horse. And that would be the equivalent of enough to provide crops for 6 to 8 people by these same estimates. And when horse traffic was at its historical height in New York, it required an estimated 15 million acres of land to produce the hay to feed them.
To make matters even worse, horse traffic was an issue. There was overcrowding on the streets, and so there were also accidents. And as an aside, this problem also existed in Julius Caesar's Rome. Horse-drawn carts were forbidden in ancient Rome from dawn to dusk as a means of controlling the traffic and pollution created by the city's horses.
And with traffic came traffic accidents, and many of these were quite brutal and had high mortality rates. Because horses can be skittish and startle, they could stampede or fatally kick humans in addition to actual wrecks happening where horse carts ran into one another. There were 200 mortalities attributed to horse-drawn vehicles in New York in 1900. And for every 10,000 vehicles pulled by horses in Chicago in 1916, there were 16.9 related deaths every year.
This hygiene issue of manure in the streets manifested, unsurprisingly, in very real illnesses. An estimated 3 billion flies a day hatched in horse manure in cities across the United States in 1900. And as flies travel throughout an urban area, everything they land on is touched by everything they have landed on before, including the manure where they hatched. All kinds of bacteria. They're the carriers of a variety of infectious diseases, and the streets of horse-inhabited cities were a perfect habitat for flies to flourish.
Yeah, there are a number of illnesses and diseases that are linked, at least in theory, to this fly problem. Particularly diseases that affected young children that didn't have immunity built up yet. So there were so many problems, and you might think, somebody fix these problems. They tried.
Well, and I'm thinking that in addition, the dust when in dry weather, the manure mm-hmm. dust filled air has to have caused some kind of respiratory
yes.
problems.
Absolutely.
I wonder if there was a name for that we have lost now.
I didn't see any in my research, but I'm sure there's some colorful moniker out
yes.
there.
Well, when we had diseases
horrifying.
Like cheese washer's lung, probably there was something.
So in 1898, there was actually a conference convened in New York. For 10 days, engineers and leaders would come together for the first International Urban Planning Conference. And one of the main agenda points was going to be solving this manure problem.
The reality of this conference was disappointing because after 3 days of deliberating, the remaining week of the conference was canceled. The planners in attendance got tired of talking about horse manure. No one had any ideas of how to actually combat the problem, and horses were essential to keeping society going at that point. So they were basically like, we don't know, throw up our hands, leave the facility.
Let's all go home. Yeah. It wasn't like they could stop using horses. Consider that horses had been used by humans for both transportation and agriculture for literally thousands of years at this point. And they were pretty much the only game going as far as that went. There were other animals that could do some of those things, but horses were really the accepted and most common way. And they were so ingrained in the day-to-day functioning of life for most people that it was unthinkable to envision a world without horses working for us. Everything would have ground to a halt. And the idea of even cutting back on the horse workforce translated immediately in most people's minds to stifling progress and industry at a time when we were really excited about unprecedented growth.
26 years before this conference, the northeastern United States had actually gotten a taste of what life would be like with a reduced horse workforce after the equine influenza epidemic of 1872. Commerce was significantly affected with just not enough animals to carry goods. And when the city of Boston had a massive fire downtown, there weren't enough horses to power the city's fire trucks. No one wanted to risk those events happening again.
So even though civic leaders were aware of the problem and the sanitation danger, as cities experienced population growth, so urban population in the U.S. had a 30 million person spike in the 100 years from 1800 to 1900, and this was happening globally as well, they just acknowledged that we couldn't figure out a way to fix it, and we still need more horses.
This was also a compounding problem because the standard of living was rising. So there was more need, on average, per person, for all of the goods that the horses were hauling around.
So that meant that they needed more horses to haul them.
Which meant more
poop. There's just no end. Oh. And even attempting, like, even kind of concentrated efforts to try to really have, like, a surge of management to clean up the existing manure problem had to employ the work of more horses to haul it away, which produced more manure. I feel like the growth motto for all cities during this time should have been like, shrug, we just need more horses. Like, they just kept putting more horses on the horse problem. One journalist predicted that London would be under 9 feet or 2.7 meters of manure by the mid-20th century. And a similar declaration in New York predicted that by the 1930s, manure would have risen to the level of third-story windows. Tracy is just wiping her face in dismay.
Obviously. Because we're all here listening to things on the internet, we didn't wind up with cities being literally buried in manure. So next we're going to talk about some of the things people tried to fix this issue involving urban horses in the late Victorian era and what eventually did actually fix it. But first we're going to pause for a sponsor break.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Say goodbye to complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping, and say hello to an advantage with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Every business faces challenges, but shipping shouldn't be one of them. So keep things simple with clear, upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges for Saturday deliveries, residential deliveries, or fuel. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there, helping you counter the rising costs of doing business with a budget-friendly alternative. And keep things reliable with on-time ground shipping, ensuring your shipments get to where they need to go while maintaining your hard-earned reputation. USPS Ground Advantage is your ticket to easy, cost-effective, and dependable shipping. It's the complete delivery service your business needs to rise above the competition. There's never been a better time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So to get back to how we finally kind of resolved this problem, sort of, a number of actions were taken to try to address all of these issues of horse overcrowding in the cities. And one of the earliest was the founding of the American Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, also known as the ASPCA. On April 10th, 1866, philanthropist Henry Berg founded the society with the primary goal of improving the lives of working horses.
Berg had witnessed cruelty to horses when he was a U.S. diplomat in Russia during Abraham Lincoln's presidency. And he, on his way back to the U.S., he traveled through London, and he observed there the Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. And that's really what inspired him to create a similar organization in the United States.
When Berg campaigned for the approval of the ASPCA charter, he stated, quote, "This is a matter purely of conscience. It has no perplexing side issues." He worked diligently for the next 20 years until his death in 1888, often rescuing horses from the street himself. He was the driving force for the country's first animal rights laws, and the rapidly growing horse population made it basically impossible to eliminate the cruelty problem, though.
Yeah, he made it his life's work, but it didn't all get solved. And then in terms of traffic issues, a lot of the traffic laws that we still have today in the United States are actually the result of these crowded city streets filled with horse-drawn vehicles. William Phelps Eno, who is also called the father of traffic safety, started noticing traffic issues when he was just a boy in New York in the 1860s. And as he and his family traveled throughout Europe, he observed how other countries handled their traffic. And each of them had problems, but some of them also had some unique solutions.
In one of his books titled, quote, The Story of Highway Traffic Control, published in 1939, he wrote, quote, I don't think I ever went on the streets of New York nor of any other city or town without being astonished at the stupidity of drivers, pedestrians, and police.
And once he grew up and was working in New York with his father in the 1890s, he wondered why no one was doing anything about the horse traffic. So he decided that he would. And in 1897, he submitted a proposal for a subway route that also had surface roads and elevated roads and bicycle lanes on top. And it was designed to ease congestion. And this plan wasn't adopted, but he really didn't give up.
He wrote several articles in rapid succession. They were called Reform in Our Street Traffic Most Urgently Needed, and then Suggestions for the Management of Carriages and Entertainments, and then Rules of the Road Revised. While these were initially published in a horseman's periodical titled The Rider and Driver, Eno continued to publish and spread them in various places and pamphlets until many of his ideas were actually adopted. You can thank Eno for stop signs, yield signs, pedestrian islands, which he first saw in Paris as a kid and adapted in New York, and driving on the right side of the road.
And his rules really did help with congestion and traffic accidents, thus reducing horse carriage-related deaths. But you may have noticed neither the ASPCA nor these road rules helped the manure crisis.
In the end, the manure issue was never solved so much as it was outmoded. Nobody ever figured out a way to keep up with the millions of pounds of horse manure that were dropping in cities daily. But when Henry Ford introduced the Model T in 1908, it made the personal car relatively affordable for a lot more consumers in the United States. And so many of them did switch over time from a family horse and buggy to mechanized travel.
And Ford's advertising made clear the cost effectiveness of making this switch. Quote, this is one of the ad campaigns. Quote, old Dobbin, the family coach horse, weighs more than a Ford car. But he has only 1/20th the strength of a Ford car, cannot go as fast nor as far, costs more to maintain, and almost as much to acquire.
It wasn't as though the United States and other countries instantly ditched their horses and moved over to gasoline-powered automobiles, although some did herald the automobile as the solution to the pollution problem. But slowly, over time, as more vehicles were manufactured, more people bought them, horses became progressively more and more phased out. By 1912, there were more cars on New York streets than there were horses for the first time in history.
Yeah, they really thought, like, thank goodness someone has solved this methane issue.
Yeah, but we
horses were considered. Yeah, but they weren't thinking that.
They weren't there yet.
Pollution is solved, you guys. Cars fixed it.
Yeah. But then came lead pollution.
Yeah.
And other vehicle emissions. And so many other problems. I mean,
yeah, but as horses were seen less and less on city streets, the manure crisis ended anyway.
Right.
So not in one fell swoop, but in this slow sort of ebb. We didn't know what was coming down the pike, but, you know, the manure, we're not living in 40 feet of manure. You gotta look on the bright side with this one, Tracy.
Sure. I don't have a car anymore. It's great. I say that, but we do have a car in our household, so when I need to get somewhere in a car, I can.
Yeah.
I am definitely, you know, even though we have plenty of other environmental problems related to our transportation, I'm definitely glad I'm not wading through hip-high manure to get anywhere, because that would be awful.
Yeah, it's horrifying to think about. It's horrifying. Like, I can't, you know... Even in the dirtiest cities today, there's, like, I still couldn't imagine. Yeah, I just can't.
Right.
Yuck is the short version.
Yeah.
I could have just said yuck 22,000 times and called it a day.
Well,
that would have been very informative, though.
There are definitely plenty of other problems like this. I had always considered that, like, the dirt problem in earlier, like, first European and then colonial American cities to be about, like, garbage and not having enclosed sewers. And, like, there was a part of me that was like, horses poop, you gotta clean that up. But, like, the scale of this poop situation was not anywhere in my consciousness until you handed this to me today.
No, I hope our listeners are not so grossed out that they will enjoy the opportunity to wow their friends with these little factoids. But I DM'd a friend of mine and said, how much manure do you think fell in New York on an average day in the 1890s? And it was like something like 3 tons or something was the number that they could come up with. And I'm like, oh, you beautiful child.
Wow.
You know what? I have pretty, pretty listener mail that has nothing to do with gross things.
It's not about poop. Yay! Please
no, not even a little.
The non-listener mail.
I have two pieces. The first one is from our listener, Deanne. She says, hi, Holly and Tracy. I'm writing to thank you for the hours of enjoyment and education you and the past hosts have given me over the years. I've been listening since 2012 and have spent countless hours in your company. I have an hour-long each-way commute and have found podcasts and audiobooks to be great friends to keep me sane. Stuff You Missed in History Class has become one of my favorites, and I've actually listened through the past episodes twice. The first time picking and choosing those episodes I wanted to hear, and the second most recent time listening to all the episodes in an attempt to broaden my horizons. It worked. So, in appreciation, I have enclosed a few things. First, handmade by me earrings. I do hope you both have your ears pierced, but if you don't, I don't mind if you regift. The metal is sterling silver, and you can leg wrestle for choice. And then she also sent a book along with an episode recommendation that I'm not going to read because we might do it, and it's interesting. But I wanted to thank you, Deanne, so much. Those earrings are beautiful. Tracy and I aren't going to leg wrestle. The bigger problem is that we both like both of them.
We do both like both of them. Like, you sent me a picture, and I was like, I can't pick. They're both so shitty.
I suggested we each get one of each. But Tracy doesn't seem to like that plan. We'll see what happens. But thank you so much. They're so lovely. And we'll post pictures of them on our social so other people can see them. They're absolutely so, so pretty. And the other one is a wonderful card that I got from our listeners and my pals, Ashley and Jen. They came to visit the House of Works offices a while back, and I hung out with them, and I just adored them both. They're the most wonderful ladies, super fun, really fun to talk to. And they sent me a beautiful card, like a thank you card for the day. And here's what makes it majestic and delightful for me. It is a card in the shape of Oscar Wilde.
Nice!
And it's him, so he can stand on my desk forever and judge me in
how
the
great
way that he would. And I love it so much. It's just the absolute best. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much, Ashley and Jen. You guys are delightful, and I adore you. And I'm so thankful for all our listeners that write us cool stuff. If you would like to write to us, you can do so at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com. You can visit us at facebook.com/MissedInHistory. We're on Twitter @MissedInHistory, at pinterest.com/MissedInHistory, at missedinhistory.tumblr.com, and we're on Instagram @MissedInHistory. You can also visit our parent site, How Stuff Works. Do a search for almost anything you can think of, and you're going to find some pretty cool content that will inform you and educate you and at least entertain you around that content. You can also visit us at missedinhistory.com, where we have the back catalog of every episode of this show ever with all hosts through the years, as well as show notes for any of the episodes that Tracy and I have put together, as well as some other goodies. So if you want, please come and visit us online at howstuffworks.com and missedinhistory.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh? Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer, and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great-looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection, and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.